want to thank all of you for being here. I continue to be overwhelmed with the generosity that you guys showed. I know that I have an excuse again today. We're looking at Revelation. We're looking at chapter 3. We're looking at the sticks of the letters that the Lord is writing to the churches. We start out by remembering that these letters were letters to specific churches and specific places and at specific times. But they also are letters that collectively make one letter written to all churches at all times. The sixth letter is written to the church of Philadelphia. From Philadelphia, maybe. How does the city get a name like that? This is the first one. The one in the U.S. is a copy. How do you get that name? Well, the traditions say that way, way back somewhere there was a king who wanted to honor a brother of his. And he built this city. Actually, I think he rebuilt the city after an earthquake. And it got that name from that context. I will tell you that there's a tiny little hint that some part of that tradition might be true. Let me take a moment and have you look at verse 12. When we get there, you can look at it again. This is the traditional end of these letters. Anyone who proves victorious, he begins to make a promise. And the promise here, I will make you into a pillar. I will make anyone who proves victorious into a pillar in the sanctuary of my God, and it will stay there forever. This city, the original one, was built in an earthquake-prone area, and there were numerous times where they were driven out of the city by the earthquake. And the hint of, you get to stay. It's a place you can stay. You don't have to run. That much of the thing might be that. Now, when we read this letter, if you've been regular with us for the last few weeks, you should notice something unusual. We talked in earlier weeks about this particular thing coming. But now that it's here, let's make sure we notice that. So if you will, starting at verse 7, read with me. Writing to the angels, remember that word technically means messenger, and therefore could mean the leader or the pastor, or the angel of the church in Philadelphia. And so here is the message of the Holy and True One who has the key of David. So that when he opens, no one will close, and when he closes, no one will open. I know about your activities. Look, I have opened in front of you a door that no one will be able to close. And I know because you are not very strong, you have kept my commandments and not disowned my name. Look, I'm going to make the synagogue of Satan, those who falsely claim to be Jews but are liars because they are no such thing, I will make them come and fall at your feet and recognize that I have loved you. Because you have kept my commandments and persevere, I will keep you safe in the time of trial which is coming to the whole world, so the people of the world who have said, I am coming soon. Hold firmly to what you already have, and let no one take your victory's crown away from you. Anyone who proves victorious, I will make into a pillar in the sanctuary of my God, and it will stay there forever. I will inscribe on it the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which is coming down from my God in heaven, and my own new name as well. Let anyone who can hear, listen to what the Spirit is saying to the church. Now, when you read through this, did anything jump out at you as something that might bear some discussion? You know, you never was. Yeah, that's what's unusual about this letter. If you're here and say, nevertheless, I have this against you, or yes, there is this that you lack, or, you know, there's just one problem when you talk about it. This is a church for which there's no criticism. Give it another look. And that's unique among the seven. Okay? But, that's what's different. Then you notice something that's here that maybe bears some discussion or deserves some discussion. Did you notice anything? What did you notice? So that's why did you truly notice something? What did this first talk about enough to make it sort of stand up? Christ's return, persecution, or something else. We just talked about a lot more.
Right? Yeah,
not that. That's not the big one. Did you spot that? The description of Jesus, what did it say? Remember, each time in each letter, we haven't made a big deal on this because I don't know necessarily in every case what to do, but I know what to do with Jesus. There's a description of Jesus that ties into the things that he's saying in the letter. What's the description? He's got a key. And it doesn't say one thing about that key, it says two things about that key. What's the first thing it says about the key? With it, what? He opens the door, that door stays open. That's what the second thing it says.
Shut.
If he shut the door, it stays shut. Jesus is presented as the one who opens and closes the door. When he gets down into the body of the letter, something is said again. Did you spot it?
What does it say?
Almost the next verse. I place before you an open door. Now, is the door metal or is it wood? Is it made of maple or is it made of mahogany? I think it's passage opportunity. Much bigger, simpler. Now, I want to spend the time we have talking about doors this morning. Because I think that's what leads out is worth talking about. There's a couple of other things in here that are well worth talking about, but I don't know if we're going to have time to do all that. We're going to talk about doors. Specifically, we're going to talk about open doors, we're going to talk about doors of opportunity. Now, my question is, when we talk about a door of opportunity, what comes to mind, as you've already said, access you've already said, availability, I think, maybe a little harder to fit in here. But I think before I do this, I want to ask you a question. This chunk, this is what do we know about it from this letter? What do we know about this person from this letter? Is it a strong church?
No.
No, it's a weak church. Is it a healthy church? I sure don't want you gagging on this one. Is it a weak church? Yeah, because it has a little strength. Is it healthy?
Yeah.
What's the strongest evidence for the health of this church? The strongest evidence for the health of this church is the absence of the nevertheless. That's why we started this. This is the first church, and you will find it's the only church, that when Jesus writes the letter to it, he doesn't put in a criticism. Let me ask you a question. If there had been something to criticize, what probably would have happened?
He could have been
a criticism. Assuming you follow and agree with that logic, this church is in what?
Do what?
You just have to
believe
and help. Wait a second. That doesn't make sense. It's a dirty topic, isn't it? Oh. Well, I think before we go talking about doors, we need to say this next, talking about weak and healthy. I think church people are weak and healthy. When somebody says weak, and when somebody says healthy, what's the context for understanding those people? Thank you. babies are weak, but also is healthy. There's one I think we were praying for in the other hour that isn't right now.
Why could they exist from the physically weak from the persecution?
Most of the people to think about is come down there. They say the term weak is a word that is looking at the way the world sees the church. Healthy is a word that says this is how God sees the church. You have little strength. My Lord, if they're as healthy as they appear to be, they've got lots of strength. But whose strength is it? It's not theirs. So whose strength is it? God's strength. And so in reading this, I encourage you to hear the term weak or of little strength as a word that will describe how the world would see that body. And help us, which I think is something we are allowed to say by what's here, as being a judgment of God with you on the state of affairs in that particular place. Now, you don't get the lecture on throwing the mask in the first lesson.
That's what
I want to make sure that you connect with. That wonderful statement of Paul, it's in my weakness that is strong. That the kind of strength that God talks about doesn't come from human strength, it comes from God's strength. And that's part of it. Almost that the strength that God has is even more seen in weakness. I'll only say that the situation in Tanzania may be revealed by a specific example of that reason right now. What Rob Kidd tells us is that in the letter that his mom sent, he reported that on Easter Sunday they baptized 30 people in one of the churches. There's four villages they did, and in one of those four villages they baptized 30 people on Easter morning. I don't remember us having that in the service for 30 people here on Easter Sunday morning. It would have been wonderful if we had. Then you had something. Possibly. Again, I think that might be, again, a worldly, a measure that the world might put on. But I think that's possible as well, but the effects of persecution and all that could be. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time there, but I wanted to keep a hand on the description of the church as weak, but there's no criticism here from the Lord, which implies a health that is remarkable. So now let's talk about a little bit. Like I said, access. You talk about the Lord again. Right? You talk about the Lord's of opportunity.
There's a time, not necessarily a time, it takes from us like 10 o'clock. I hate to use the word until opportunity, but there's a time for opportunity that has to work. In your life, you may have it, but once you're past a certain point, you can't go back again. Still a sense of period where
English. And I remember a poem that started out, there is a tide in the affairs of men. Every flood leads on the Lord. And the implication is if you don't catch them to the tide. Back in the days when ships were moved out of great harbors by the movement of the tides. And do we do that today? Be careful. They don't move by the movement of the tide, but they better still be aware of it. You see the picture of the newspaper this week. The Queen Mary too, passing under the very down and narrow street. When did they go through? The low tide. Why? Because the high tide, there was 13 foot clearance between the highest point on the bridge and the highest point on the ship. So they had to go through the low tide. Still got it. When we use the phrase door of opportunity, we don't usually think the same thing as we use window of opportunity. Window, we usually think of, okay, it opens here, it's going to close there. Somehow, the word door of opportunity, we don't think that. That's a big one. That is a huge one. We're going to spend some time talking about that. What else does it mean? Yeah, the choice
to go through.
You got to stand out here, passage and access. If any passage and access, if you don't go through, you're not aware if that door will take you. You're not aware
of it. We have to run through
the
door
to hold that thing if we're going to knock. We're not going to
talk
about that on
yet.
We're not going to practically every other door to hide. But what we do,
that
will help us.
Well, you don't have to say anything about that, because that church is all about.
Yeah. This is a choice with respect to an open door. Who opened the door? Jesus. But there's not a sense of the people being forced to go through. If the people have the opportunity to go through, then they've got a choice about where they're going to go. Yeah. What else comes to mind as you think about doors of opportunity? They may not stay open forever. There's a choice about whether you go through or not. You've got two big ones.
The other side is better than this side.
Congrats, Rita.
I don't think you know this
other way. Now, I'm going to choose a specific way to word this. I think it fits with what you heard this morning in a very different context. But that's what you have to say. If you have a door of opportunity, you do not know what's on the other side. But if Jesus opened the door, what's what can he say? You don't know what's on the other side, but what?
Very good.
Faith says it's good.
Or right.
And the one who does. You know, I've got to go back one more time. Listen again to the description of Jesus in the opening part. Because I think that is so important, I cannot stand how important that is. He that holds the key of David was number one. When he opens the door, no human can close it. But it doesn't stop there. It doesn't say it's open forever. It says it's not going to close by human agency. But it could close if I close it. If I shut it, it's going to stay shut until I choose it. The choice of opening and closing doors is the Lord, and opening and closing are both there. That's where I think the timeliness comes in. I think where it leads is permanent. The door itself going up there. And if I can get that in front of you, then when we come to the end of it, I may be able to get a little bit excited. And I may be able to get a little bit scared. All the same time. The best thing I can tell you is that we go back to Deuteronomy. You got that question? Go back to Deuteronomy. Moses said to the people, I'm going to raise up a prophet like you from your brothers, and you can hear a prophecy of Jesus for them. If you turn into Chronicles, you find David had an encounter with God where its meaning and significance is still hanging in the balance. Everything else is gone. You know, everything else is settled and dealt with. The meaning is significant. You know, what am I here for? What does it all mean? And the Lord says to David, I'm going to put your descendants on a throne that is a permanent throne. And the reference of the key of David goes back to somewhere in the Kings, I think it is. It wasn't David, it was Hezekiah was the king. And he had a trusted servant who had the key. And he unlocked something. You know, those people, when he closed it, he had the control of entry to the king, access to the king. They talked about that as the key of the king, and this was David's throne, and the phrasing that's coming out of that is, for the image of Jesus as the control of spirit, the doors of a spiritual opportunity opens or closes. The thing that leads to us, those have eternal value. The door itself opens or closes. I'm not sure that's permanent. I think it's, even at the beginning of this, I think it's saying something that's more subtle and more complicated. Okay? Don't know what's on the other side, but faith says that spiritual good or spiritually correct, and it leads to things that have eternal value. What else do you have?
Also, it depends on spiritual discernment, because you're not coming along the doors of opportunity. In life, that some are going to be good doors and some are going to be bad doors, based on the choices. But if you're led by a guy who's here, and like this church was, you're going to tend to migrate towards maybe good doors instead of bad doors.
Yeah, right. You're using the phrase doors. And this scripture, okay. I'm not disagreeing with you. I think there are some churches that have multiple doors that may be open. I think every church will have some doors of opportunity that counterfeit. They look like doors of opportunity, but they aren't. I think that's more what you're talking about. And I think that there is a wisdom required to do what? To recognize. To recognize which doors are the ones that really should pay attention to and which ones take attention to. Before I take your comment, let me just catch this one step further. There is a wisdom to even know that there's a door. If you don't recognize there's a door, you don't have a choice to make. If you're blind, we're talking spiritually blind, you don't even realize there's a door of opportunity that's available to you, because there's not any way you're going to be bothered by any of the rest of it. And so the wisdom, I'm trying to flesh out what you're talking about. I think there's a wisdom of recognizing which doors are the right ones, but there's a wisdom to recognize there's even a door to start with. You almost have a sense of Jesus saying to this church, listen, I've got something to say to you, and it's going to surprise you, because all I'm going to do is come in. But I'm also putting you on alert. You've got an opportunity. That is an opportunity for me. And he stops. That's all he did. You see that? That's all he did. Now what's the message is one of a challenge. Jesus is saying, there's an open door. What's the implication? There's an invitation. And you can say invitation, or you can say challenge, you can probably say some other things. But the wisdom to recognize there is a door, the spiritual insight. Jesus said over and over again at the end of the letter, the one that has ears, let him hear what the Spirit is saying. So this church, the Spirit is saying, you've got an open door of opportunity in front of you. You got the wisdom to hear that, then you're going to start to do something about it. All the rest of it comes in close.
Just along that same line, though, is the design of this door found it gracious enough to place it before them. It wasn't as if he had to make him run around trying to find it.
They're going to have to turn aside and make that
as far as making them make that choice. It's not like they would be something you'd ever say, well, I just couldn't find it. I didn't know where it was.
He needed to.
What was it? You talked about the
The commentators who speak of it say at least four different things, maybe five, that door could represent. Right now, I'm not being as specific about that as it could be. Yes. I think down here,
not the same as the right time. And that's how, you know, I'm always with you, the door's open, I'll be with you. Having just come to me in the first few months when you read this, I thought, wow, isn't that great news for them? Because they don't have much, and they have been downtrodden. And wow, but then you hear the doors always open and access to God, and He's rewarding them because they've been faithful. I've heard that as a door of reward and a door of curse.
I think it is absolutely a door of reward. Because I think it has been given to this group because what they have done has merited the next step or the next stage. You may remember Jesus saying at one point, if you can't even handle money, who's going to give you true riches? The younger you have to handle money, that pain is there. Who's going to entrust you with something that's really worth money? I hear this as a door of access to God, Jesus' own presence. That's at least what's on the other side of that door.
Yes, sir. Are you thinking,
how hard is it to get the price of something? I am absolutely thinking metaphor, but I'm thinking metaphor and that and other things all sort of twisted together. That is, I think if you walk through doors of opportunity for service, you're going to find yourself also walking through a door of closer to God. I think it is not one thing, but several things that you can pick out. That's why I'm trying to be vague in here, because I think there's something much more important to be said about this than needs to be said today. And then the other thing is that sort of goes beyond that. But you don't know what's on the other side. You don't know how the deeper involvement of the Lord will come. You don't know how the opportunities and so forth will play themselves out.
I guess not to be on the negative side, but I sometimes think about the door of isolation, the tool of isolation, being separated from God.
I don't hear that here, what you said at the front. I don't hear what you said at the end, but I do hear something at the front. Okay? So, let me just take the first of these over here. You will hold your place here and go to Matthew 7 for this minute. Somebody can find that in Matthew 7, verses 7 and 8, which is in the which is in the Sermon on the Mount. I'm not allowed to read the one that was yet.
Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives. He who seeks finds. And to him who knocks, the door will be opened.
And then you have all the studies. If your kid asks for something, you know how to respond appropriately. Don't you think God knows how to respond even better than you? So, to me, when I read this, if Jesus has put the door up there, I don't think that's bad, but is isolation still part of it, as my friend is suggesting? Keep looking at it, because I think it's there. If I go through the door, what's going to happen? We're going to go with me necessarily. Now again, we're talking metaphor here. But there are paths that I can walk that bring me closer to the Lord. But those paths may put me at some distance. Persecution may actually grow depending on the doors you walk through, the doors you don't walk through. This is a metaphorical word. So is there some isolation through there? Maybe so. That's the nature of the doors. If I go out there, I'm away from you guys. If somebody comes in here, they're away from whatever was out there.
But in the sense of the fact that the door really is closed inside, you can get out the door. If the door wasn't closed, unless we all came at the same time, then it wouldn't be able to have to close doors or not. But
yeah. Let's spin that for just a second. I get the impression here's a church that's been mocking for a while, and Jesus said,
Okay. Or no? That's right. No, no. That's one of the ways you can read this.
Okay. We've kind of been caught in position to expect the world to go through the door with us. But what's hardest is when the family members or dear friends will walk through it. That's very simple to get out
of
place. Yeah. Some isolations, people don't say that there's some isolations broke out today. I mean, when the woman broke the jar of wheat and she was cheap, it was his fault that said, we can use that money, won't you? You know, so the step further maybe you follow back before the door became misleading and wrong, and you
know, and that's a real problem. Thank you. It's been the time of all. Talked about this subject. If you want to just write it down and let me look them up, that'd be fine. 1 Corinthians 16, verse 9. 1 Corinthians 16, he's closing out the letter. He's beginning to write greetings and talk about some things he's going to do. For example, in verse 5, he says, in any case, I'll be coming to you after I pass through Macedonia. If I have to go through Macedonia, I may be saving some time, but you may need to send me the letter. And then he says in verse 8, but I shall remain at Ephesus, you can almost hear him say remain here. Until Pentecost, this is verse 8 and going into verse 9, 1 Corinthians 16. For a very promising door is standing wide open to this, and there are many against us. Can you hear those two things together? The door is wide open. Opportunities. There are many against us. Possible, like they're getting. 2 Corinthians, go ahead and work with you. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 12. When I came to Troas for the sake of the gospel of Christ, the door was open for me there in the Lord. Two times now, he's talked about doors that were open. Come to Colossians. Come to Colossians chapter 4. Burning background in Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, chapter 2, we'll look ahead. Colossians chapter 4, as we start reading in verse 2, he's now speaking to people at Colossae, and he says, be persevering in your prayers, and be thankful as you stay awake to Christ. Pray for us especially, asking God to throw open a door for us to announce the message and proclaim the mystery of Christ. And then watch how he finishes it. For the sake of which, I am a gentle. And then he finishes, pray that I may proclaim it as clearly as I ought. If you hear that last phrase, he's already claiming the open door to share Christ with. Pray for a door to be open. And then pray for me when I start doing the things that are on the subject. So, in a couple of cases, you almost hear a surprise. There's a wide open door I almost wasn't expecting. There's no place where he wanted to be here yet to pray for it. God's people, I think, are called in both situations. Recognize the door when it's not open in front of you. Pray for the doors to be open when it's not correct. And in both cases, obstacles are going to come along with it. Again, I don't want to push the metaphor too far, but I think that's appropriate so far. How you doing? Okay. Let me take you then to the last piece. I'm going to go to one place back in Revelation first. There's something I want you to see, and I want you to see how these two things go together. Or at least what I assume you want together. There's something absolutely beautiful in verse 10, and I want to make sure you see it. He says, because you have kept my commandment to persevere, I will keep you safe in the time of trial to come to the whole world. There's an implicit promise in Revelation chapter 3, verse 10. These people have kept his commandments. His promises to keep them. Now, watch how this plays out in Luke 13. This is the time that I want to get you excited, and I want you to get scared all at the same time. Luke chapter 13, I want to start reading verse 22. Are you there? Are you ready? Luke chapter 13, starting verse 22. Through towns and villages he went teaching,
making his way to Jerusalem. Someone said to him, "Sir, will there be only a few saved?" He said to them, "Try your hardest to enter by the narrow door. For I tell you, many will try to enter and will not succeed." Then he continued, "Once the master of the house has got up and locked the door, you may find yourself standing outside knocking on the door, saying, 'Lord, open up to us.' But he will answer, 'I don't know you, and I don't know where you came from.'" Now let's pause there for just a moment. Try your hardest to enter by the narrow door. It's going to be a lot of trying, but many will not succeed. Don't let yourself get caught in a position where when the master decides to close the door, you're on the wrong side. How do you get to be on the wrong side of the door? There's only one way. It's real simple. You didn't walk through. You didn't walk through. Then a presumption says, "I can walk through and open the door anytime I want to." The message of timeliness says, that's not true. God chooses when the door is open. God chooses when the door is closed. If you have a door of opportunity in front of you, a door of opportunity to deepen relationship with the Lord, a door of opportunity to place a line of service, whatever that might be, if you don't walk through, you may find that door closed. I don't know whether by that he means you may find his death suddenly shows up and you weren't expecting it. It was just about a year ago, one of my close friends dropped dead early in the morning. He didn't expect it, neither did we. We're still grieving over that. Or it may be more in the metaphor that the time of opportunity is now passed.
But it almost has, though, if you invite him into your heart. That's correct.
Well, let me stay with this. If you treat this as a metaphor, inviting him into your heart and beginning to work alongside of him, it's the equivalent, I think, walking through the door. We're talking about people who didn't walk through the door.
But is that door ever shut if you are shut? Until you die. Yes. Yes, first you have to test you. You know what I'm saying? But if you do that any time before physical death, is that door ever shut?
Let me try to make this as simple as I possibly can. In the first hour, there's a couple that's been attending. And they start attending in here. We've got a daughter who's been living there. So I understand. Okay. 2 weeks ago, Stephanie would never have thought that she'd be dealing with what she's dealing with right now. The opportunities she would have seen for herself are now different. Whatever the doors of opportunity are in her heart, it's a different set of doors. And it happened in a moment of time on I-64. So yeah, I think doors can close there.
Now, if it's in my heart, if it's in my heart, which is no one, is it ever closed? If it stands up with, if he ever rejects you, if you ask, that'll be over the gate, I don't know.
But when I read this, it makes me think that at least I need to say maybe. But does that come over the rest of
it? Well, I think if you die and leave this world unsaved,
yeah. Now, you have to come up with that. I think we're talking about two different doors. And this is where that's what I think breaks down. You're talking about relationship with God and that saved open. Opportunities of service, opportunities of witness, those kinds of things, I think there's a kind of thing to do those. But I'm talking about
that.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about that. But I'm talking about the time that I have to do something. I think that's just temporal. And that's all I'm trying to talk about today. Okay? Now, I want you to listen to this. How come these people are outside the door when the door closed? Because they didn't walk through. Okay. You may find yourself standing outside knocking on the door saying, "Lord, open it up," and he will answer, "I don't know you and I don't know where you came from." Now listen to the words that follow. Then you will start saying, "We want ate and drank in your country. You talk in our streets," and he will reply, "I don't know where you come from." Be gone, he will do it. When did you and I eat and drink in the presence of the Lord Jesus? At the Lord's Supper. At communion. Could he be saved? You can come to my table and eat the Lord's Supper. But if you don't walk through the doors that I'm talking about, What fellowship do we have? I want you excited. I want you scared. I want you excited that God promises to let the Lord in front of you. And I want you concerned about the consequences if you refuse to walk through them. Because I think that's the message to the church of Philadelphia. I think that's the message to the church of Philadelphia. It's very, very simple. If God puts the door in front of you, it's an invitation to partner with him. It's something he's doing. I'm using lacking language now. And a refusal to take advantage of that. A refusal to meet God in those terms. I'm not arguing about whether salvation is or isn't in the back. I'm talking about the quality of the fellowship, of opportunity, of service, both windows, come and they go. We spent some time in the first hour talking about a few of the doors of opportunity to develop in this church. Let me mention them and then we'll quit. See y'all. How does that come about? One guy. Celebrate recovery for those of you who may not know. One guy who identifies himself today as a recovering alcoholic found out about this program and said, my goodness, I could have used that when I was at my doctor's study. Maybe I can help somebody. And all of a sudden we've got what, 800 people who are pouring their life and trying to reach out to people who still need that. I mean, English is a second language. We started in that church. One or two people saw a need for literacy. And it's mushrooming into something huge. How's the prison ministry struggle? Larry Prince read a verse in Matthew and was just struck. God said, I was in prison and you didn't come visit me. And he said, we're not doing that. And all of a sudden, he began to respond. A whole bunch of people joined him and we've got one of the biggest prison ministries on the East Coast. Ours is not a church in which there is a door of opportunity. We've got lots of them. And there's new doors opening there. The question is, this letter is addressed collectively and individually. As a church, we may collectively be walking through some doors, but it's always some of the individuals within the church who do that. Have you picked your area of service? Have you found your place to plug in? We are working on something called intermobilization, one of the big 4 points in our church. You've been mobilized. If you are, great. You can be an inspiration to others. If you haven't, then it's all about us. Because on the other side of the door are his promises, including deeper relationships with the Lord, deeper relationships with your brothers and sisters. Enjoy it like you would more. There were a fair few minutes. Father, we thank you for people in this place long ago. It was identified as a place of brotherly love. Because the doors that you set in front of us are doors that let us experience and demonstrate the love for our brothers and sisters and the door of the love for those who might be our brothers and sisters if they ever meet you and are smiling. Teach us how to be your children. Teach us how to be brothers and sisters to others of your faithful children. And teach us how to be as concerned for every person in the world as you are concerned for every person in the world. Always with great excitement.